Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the program Words That Work. It's not what you say. It's what the people hear and feel. Words that works. That came to me a while back as a title of a program. It took me a while to think it through. And as I would ride down the road, I see all these symbols. And I see all these billboards, and most of them are religious in content, and the billboards was telling you that God gave his only begotten son, and as a result of that, it was hoping that people would gravitate to the Christianity. And as we continue to look out, what did we see? We saw further interruption. But as I was saying, as I was driving down the road, and we call it the Bible Belt, the area that had slaves, where slavery was king, and where whenever you take time and look at all these statues that were erected, and you just wonder, what is this all about? And then whenever they started talking about taking the statues down, all hell broke loose. As we look at sports, just as bad. Words. It says that black people can't be quarterbacks on a football team because they're not smart enough. They also say blacks cannot play first base. Again, for the same reason. They're not smart enough. And whenever that even was brought into soccer. Our guest today was a soccer player. He was an indoor professional soccer player. And he was to be here to tell his story. Not somebody else's story or somebody else's version of his story, but he was to be here to tell his story. How he started out in 1975 whenever he first kicked the soccer ball. And it was natural for him. And he just went from there. And in there, the center forward or the midfielder, the one in the middle, they were supposed to be the best player. And because of that, they did not want people of color staying in those positions, especially on what they call a select team. Back then, they called them traveling teams, and that was where he grew up. Just a little background, just in case he doesn't show his mama is in the hospital. He said he was going to be on, but we don't know. We're not sure. And it was a journey. It was a journey. Most of the people on the team were non-African-American. And people were envious of him and his ability, what he could do that ball and make that ball do. I think his idol at that time was Pele. And when you look back, people thought that he didn't have to work. He did. He worked to perfect his skills. He would jog. And he and I would get out in the backyard and practice. There were certain drills that we did. And one of them, well, two of them I remember. When I was the defender, I let him be the striker. Because he acted like he was a little shy to take on the kids who were a little bit larger than him. I let him beat me a couple of times. Build his confidence. Whenever he beat me a couple of times, he showed that he could take on the big guys and he could put moves on them. And then I would have him stand with his back to the goal. And I would serve the ball to him. And he had to pivot 360 and shoot. Drill that. And he was able to do that without even thinking. And that fell on him in that sport. And what I would do at times, I would play with the boys who were older than him, and that helped him. And what it helped him to do was to see that he could play with the best of them. And people didn't understand that. Now, that was, and that is, my son. He went on, became All-American, All-State, got a scholarship to college. And he was even recruited for the Army, West Point. But I think he liked the discipline. In fact, he would have to get up real early because he got a sample of the military whenever he went to military school, a high school. Trying to give him opportunity to call in. And my co-host today is not here either. He hasn't called in. We will terminate. Well, I guess we've got 3 minutes. We will just end this segment. And hopefully next week we will do it again. This program, this episode, was to kick off Black History Month. But for this I'm talking from Internet Radio Station, Black History is every day, every month. But to go along with tradition, we decided to do a Black History segment. We will have an ex-African-American police chief, not this coming week, but the week after this. So, we haven't confirmed the ones of this coming week. As of yet, probably going to be something in the era of spirituality. So, the way that we had it set up, I think his time is up. He on hold. And see if I can reach him. And I was talking to him earlier. He was supposed to be here. Well, he should be with us shortly. And until then, we can start to continue. I grew up with some excellent baseball players. A couple of them were with the little Yankees farm club. And one of them played with the Brooklyn Dodgers farm club. But they were before their time. Before their time. They were the wrong color. And who gained from that? Nobody. Society didn't. Society lost. And I'm watching lacrosse. And we want to welcome everybody called him Junior. Would you like to say a word or two about who you are?
I am William. I do the...
Speak up. Speak up a little bit.
I'm William, and I am the host of The Rise of the Dry Bones, and I am here listening.
Well, what we want you to do today, kicking off, as I stated earlier, Black History is every month, but this is a month that they designated for Black History. So we will be talking about Blacks who excelled and who achieved. And we're kicking it off with you as an African-American athlete. And I was just sort of sharing a little background. So how did you get involved in soccer?
I believe when we moved to Maryland in 76, and before that we were in D.C. In D.C., they had, at the school that we went to, a long dirt track. And during recess and P.E., I would find myself on that track just running, racing people. Now, I guess 4 and 5 years old, really about 5 years old. This is what I remember. And then we moved to Maryland, and they, during PE, didn't have a track. They had a field, and people were kicking a ball. And I went out there and started running, chasing after this ball. And I found myself faster than everybody else, and I was able to get to this ball. And over the course of time, I became more attached to the soccer ball than the actual track. And I put a lot of time in between the ages of 6 and 10 of touches, getting my touches on the ball and creating space for myself through the speed that I had already. All praise is God given. And then I was blessed more with even a better touch. I will say from that point forward, it was, I dare say easy, but it was in terms of the play. The external outside forces became louder, but the game became easier. And as I got older, I realized that I could do something with that. And between the ages of 11 and 14, I greatly excelled because I realized that I was in like the top 5-10% of the people in our area that played the game. You know, there were older kids older than me that played, that of course were better than me, that were stronger and bigger, but I was always fast, or I should say quick. And I guess by the time that I was in my sophomore and junior year of high school, I had already established myself in the top one percentile of players in the country, as I was then given the accolade of All-American twice, All-State, All-County, All-Met, freshman and sophomore year, and then junior and senior year, I got all of that plus All-American. So that's how I, you know, not without saying, it was a lot of hard work and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of swollen ankles and bruised shins. But overall, that kind of gave me the platform. So then I was able to get into college, played there. Played Division I because of the All-American status that I was in. I was able to get picked second pick or second recruit, I should say. They didn't have picks back then, but second recruit to the national champions. And I had a very up and down college career, and then after that I went pro. And the whole time my game was, as an athlete and as an African American, so-called, I was constantly excelling. But like I said earlier, the external forces were getting louder and louder. So the older I got, the more success I got, the more I realized that I would never reach the pinnacle or the zenith of what I really truly wanted, because during the times of my matriculation in the sport, there was a lot of racism, and that kind of soured my projection of where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And although I still achieved my overall goals, which was to play pro, I didn't get the one accolade I wanted, which was to play on the national team. I played junior national. I played in the national pool of players, but I was never in the top 23. But not to say that my skills couldn't make it there. It was due to the external forces that was in our country at that time that was very loud in terms of racism. But overall, I would not change anything in that. It's made me who I am, given me the opportunity to travel, meet different people, different races, places I ordinarily would never have gone to, wouldn't be places, you know, within a divided nation that many Negro people or black people like myself would never have been. I found myself a lot of times in a situation where I was asked to go over other players' houses, their parents, and I was like one of two or one of none, only black people that's ever been in their house. So over the course of time, I started realizing that sports is a great place to begin a maturation of order and discipline. Yet at the same time, I learned that order and discipline also has a shelf life, if you will. And, you know, once I was done playing pro ball in 98, I started playing, you know, like open and then over 30, then over 40, and now over 50. And the wear and tear that I've had on my body since 6 years old, now being 53, is great. And it has been a enjoyable ride through soccer, but my body is feeling it at this point. In between this, I have, in between those times of playing and learning myself and learning the things that I needed to learn to be where I'm at today, I coached, and I was a very successful coach in terms of building boys to men. I did coach girls once. It wasn't for me. Not to say that they're not good players, but it just that is not the sport that I grew up playing. So, you know, women's soccer is great. I've seen some ballers, but the boys was always my forte. So I made my coaching name by giving discipline and order to the kids, to the boys, between the ages of 9 and 18. And in doing so, I've, again, met a bunch of people who I ordinarily wouldn't have met, different lines of classism, if you will, different races, if you will, and different people. And now at 53, I see now where the kids now having the opportunities that they have is a blessing to them, which they don't even recognize, because the kids of the 70s and 80s and really the 70s and 80s, because the 90s didn't have the MLS, but the kids of the 70s and 80s didn't have anything. When we were coming through, the NASL, which is where Pelé and Beckenbauer and these other players, these great players, played in the U.S., that league folded. So we didn't have an opportunity to play pro. So it took another decade and a half for us to start to have pro soccer here in the States. And now you're starting to see more diversity within the sport itself. But as I've always said, this is a Black history conversation, but as I've always said, soccer, there are certain sports in this country that are based on race. And those sports would be, and there's several, but I'm only going to say three: hockey, soccer, and lacrosse. And the deal is that the amount of talented Negroes, boys in particular, were shut out of these sports because the growth trajectory was glass ceilinged of these sports because those were the last sports that European boys or European Americans were able to prosper in. And, whereas basketball, baseball, to some degree, and football in particular, is where the majority of the boys that are Negroes gravitated to. It would have been such a great opportunity for them had they been involved or been able to recognize the personal and community success or social success that these other sports garnered for them, because those other sports were Ivy League sports in a sense. So you had the opportunity to, if you did have the opportunity as a Negro boy to play these sports, you were automatically put into a completely, two-game situation where not only did you have to play the game where as soccer or lacrosse or hockey very well, you also had to play the game of Europeanism well as exceptionally well as well. And a lot of us fell out of that because that was not something that we readily saw ourselves doing on a continual. So a lot of brothers who played these sports went on to do other things, to take their skills on the road of life. And my point to saying that is that if these same players were given the opportunities that are given today, there would have been a faster, diversified sporting field in these Ivy League sports, so to speak. But, things come slow in America because of its foundation. But for me, I realized that, this blessing that I had in terms of skill, knowledge, and wisdom of this game was not for the game itself. It was for my overall matriculation into life from a boy to a man. And today, as a older Negro man, I see a lot of things are changing in terms of opportunities, but they have switched from a color scenario, and it really hasn't been a switch. It's always been this, but now it's gotten louder, if you will, to more of a class situation. I've had many a situation where I wanted to coach a kid who couldn't afford to play on the team, these teams, because their parents didn't have the money. And that was mainly Negroes so-called Hispanics and so-called Africans. So that's why today you see a lot of this, a lot, you know, the African nations teams in the World Cup went far. You see the Hispanic, although it's very urinized in Argentina, that is a that is more of a so-called Latin American area. So you're starting to see, and even in the MLS and these other nations, these other leagues within these other nations, especially in the Americas, you see a large amount of dark-skinned men playing the game. Lacrosse in itself, its foundation was based on the Aboriginal people of the land's game originally. But that was then usurped to go to take into an Ivy League school to allow for scholarships and such for them, because they didn't. That was a northeastern game that was played in the Princeton's, the Johns Hopkins, you know, the Ivy Leagues, the Harvard's. So you can see that even in these sports today, you have like rowing. Rowing is, you will have a light sprinkling of brown to dark brown skinned men and women in those sports. So I mean, things have changed overall in the athletics, because of course this is not a pride thing, and this is not what I'm about to say is not a pride thing, and it's not a arrogant thing, but it is extremely a confidence thing. Excuse me, because we were not able, as those young men that came through the 70s and the 80s. were not to have confidence, because the confidence that we would have as a people were, it was deemed arrogant. And then, you know, it was always an issue with that. But, you know, confidence is something that everyone has to have to do anything that they feel that they want to do and should do. So now you see a lot of confident young men and women, brown and dark brown persuasion, that today, with the opportunities in sports that they have, are excelling. However, the societal opportunities are diminishing, meaning economic, the actual jobs. And again, you know, we are those people, because everything that we have done has been to entertain others, as well as to create for others to have. So, you know, one thing that I've learned here over the past 7 years, so-called Black history, that the Old Testament is our history. And that is a huge understanding, as well as because it is something that is very necessary to understand in terms of especially where we are today in the world. So whether we entertain or not entertain, we're still the mighty men. And again, we see this with technology that our people have built to build this country. We've seen this as the Masons, the original builders of this country. We've seen this in mathematics. We've seen it in science. We've seen it in history. We've seen it in sports. And yet, at the same time, there has been a diabolical agenda to keep us from reaching our full, which goes back to the confidence where the confidence is not for us. We have to be humble, but yet they can be confident, which is really funny, because if you think about retaliation also as a social construct, was against our people. You know, we were sitting, you know, standing on the street or, you know, doing whatever we doing, and somebody would say something or do something or accuse us of something, and we would say something back, and then yet that retaliation, it met our demise. And that's just normal, regular American history. That's not a critical race theory. Those are facts. And then the way that they maintained that over us was in sports. So whenever somebody will go out, and this happens still today, a team would, there'd be some so-called black kids or men on a team, and European American would say something, or a European would say something, or a South African European would say something against, even an Australian European would say something against one of these brown or dark brown skinned men. And when that person hears that and gets and is brought to incitement, then at that point they would get in trouble. They would be put away or cast away or penalized, what have you, because they retaliated. And this is Negro history in the world, or world Negro history over the past 400 years, as it equates to and applied to all the social constructs of Western civilization. And it's very interesting to me from a sporting perspective, where I am to be sporting or show sportsmanlike behavior in the face of unsportsmanlike behavior. And that is the crux of the athlete's plight. Mine is no different than the others. I'm sure that even the top 1% in professional sports across the board, they also have they have the same story that I have, and there's plenty. I've got plenty that I'm not even going to say now. It'd take too long about the ism in the sport, in the sporting world, and especially those that grew up in between 70 and in the 70s and the 80s and before. There's most definitely a sporting ism that isn't really discussed. It's not really discussed because a lot of people would say, well, you've made it there, you just need to deal with it. You're making money, they're paying you money, you just need to deal with it. And that's something that has recently come to the forefront because Kyrie Irving didn't do anything and was systematically castrate him because he said who he felt he was. And that is from a sporting perspective. And he didn't get in a pulpit, he didn't get on the megaphone, and he didn't get on the microphone and start preaching or teaching or telling people what they should do or what they know or what he know. All he said was, hey, why? He didn't even say it. He just shared Hebrews to Negroes. And there was a backlash. And yet at the same time of that backlash, because we're now in 2023, from a sporting perspective, that backlash didn't go over so well. And so now you have a side eye in sports. And that's not to say that we should not indulge ourselves in these sports. We can. We should, because we are bigger, stronger, faster. That's not racist. Those are facts, you know. And even within racist ideology, that wouldn't even truly, by definition, be racist based on the fact that there's no power for these these Negro men and women to control it. Hence why you still are now today even having issues with the NFL hiring so-called black coaches. So all of this is culminating. This confluence of events at this time is bringing forward a massive truth that when I was younger, I never was able to obtain, which is one word, justice. The baseball player, Hank Aaron, you know, he endured a lot. He got no justice. You know, this is, you know, we see things as it's just the way it is, but it was, but now it isn't. And we have the opportunity now to really shore up our own game, but in shoring up our own game within their game, we are better than them mentally. So now my point to that saying that is that now we are metaphysically well-rounded, more so than a lot. Now, that's not to say everybody is. That's to say those that are, and it's a lot. It's more than people. It's not a ton, but it's more than people would believe. So, I mean, that's the beauty of the sport. It would allow us to entertain and then be entertained, but it also allowed us safety to some degree to excel in a world that was not ours.
I have a question. I was listening. There's something I always wonder. Why is it that black people, Negroes, or whatever term you want to characterize them, people of color, why they start their own league? I mean, why not?
Well, you got to realize that was done. And when that was done, much like Black Wall Street, it was destroyed. We had the Negro Leagues. We had the Caribbean Leagues. They're not. What happens is within our situations is that there's always a bigger league. So if you're trying to entertain and be entertained, especially as far as the money goes, you want to showcase on the biggest field. And so what normally occurs is when we begin and start our own, we excel and everything's fine. But then they want to take part of it. So where they cannot consider having their players come play in our league, they had our players go play in their league. Again, this same duality, if you will, of society to entertainment is the same. It's synonymous. So what was going on in society was going on in sports and still is. Overall, you know, you see like what happened here recently. Somebody did something, a brother, but Kyrie did what he did, and he was chastised and chided and brought low. But yet Brett Favre, who is a quarterback, who won a Super Bowl, blah, 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 he did a million times worse than what Kyrie did, and nothing. Crickets. So it's the same. Everything parallels itself. If we were to start our own, it would be destroyed, one. If we were to start our own, they would create a situation where they would say that we are being racist, which then would create a division amongst itself, a division within the division. So there's multiple reasons as to why we wouldn't. And why we did, and why we didn't, and why when we did, it didn't take it. We also have HBCUs. they play. But look what Deion Sanders and Ed Reed were saying. The HBCUs, and again, it's not all, but the majority want the name and want the clout, but they don't want to pay. And that goes along with what I said. Now, so if I'm a talented individual, and I am within my own group is successful, and I'm making, let's just say, $1,000, but if I move over, stay in the same town, but just switch leagues, now I make 10 times that amount. So the math, based on the civilization, based on the society, based on the norms, does not allow for us, the Negroes, to have their own at this particular time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense from one perspective, but if you look at, there's nothing new under the sun. So now, if we're saying that there's nothing new under the sun, everything goes around, comes back around.
Right.
It seems to me like it's time now for people to come together and not be so concerned about the money.
Right.
If you start something and do it long enough, you're going to get the notoriety. Historical black colleges. The problem that I have with historical black colleges, they can't see no further than football and basketball. And then you got talented young people of color that's playing soccer and lacrosse and these other sports at these white colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
And then you crying because your enrollment is down. I'm going to be honest with you. I was hoping that the Supreme Court would rule on the side of those Asians and others who were bringing the lawsuit against the colleges and universities against affirmative action. And I say that that would be the best thing that could happen to HBCU. Then, because if you look at it statistically, how many individuals who go to these white schools ever graduate? And the ones that are there, they wind up, when they come out, they are lunatoons. I went to school in the 60s, and whenever they first started that math, we called it the brain drain. And they would take the top black kids, and they never would graduate. Two of my classmates that graduated with me, they had gone to predominantly white colleges and universities, and they flunked them out almost. And they wound up coming to HBCU and graduated. One of them is a lawyer now, went to one of the top law schools in Washington, D.C., and graduated. And then the other one, he became a city councilman in a thriving southern town. But if it had not been for the HBCU, they would have felt like they were lower than dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have the ability. We have it.
Well, we do, but when you're dealing with a society that
even now,
we still have it now. Now, I know that there's nothing at this stage that is stopping us from creating our own, and that's kind of the, that is what we're doing today at this moment. Yet at the same time, I feel, this is just my opinion, that things are changing so rapidly that that's not what is needed anymore. I feel like the sports were a necessity for our people to, one, maintain order, discipline, to maintain the growth of the nation itself, not the American nation, but the nation of Negroes themselves, the populace. Because if not, if we didn't have those opportunities, or forget the opportunities, if we didn't have those outlets, there's no telling what we would do. And now it could be positive, it could be negative, right? So the sports gave us an opportunity to, while we were being unrighteously mishandled or handled in this country, that was a bright spot. That was one of the bright spots. So, you know, these things are all for time. Like, they're not a eternal condition. These are conditions, these are societal conditions for a time. Like, they come and then they go. What's next? I don't know. You know, should we just throw the baby out with the bathwater? No. We should continue down the same vein that we've been in and make it ours. I do believe that. Yet I don't think that I don't think that the goal anymore, I'll say it, the goal is the same. I think the goal has changed for us. At one point it was, I got to get a college degree. Then it became, I got to be able to make this money. And then it was, you know, I need the American dream. And then, you know, I need to get on this team. I need to make this money on this team so that I could achieve the American dream. Well, all of that, in my opinion, has changed here as of late. And you're starting to see it at the professional level where a lot of players, because you got to, mind you, you got to understand that the higher you go, the worse it is for your freedom. Now, if I'm a Caucasian fellow, the higher I go, the more I gain freedom. But if I'm a Negro fellow, the higher I go, the less freedom I have. What do I mean by that? I mean that if you look at football and basketball, those guys do not have the opportunity to speak freely like we're speaking today. They can't get on a podcast. They can't get on they cannot testify to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They cannot go out there and talk about who they are to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They either have to say that they are Christian or they are Muslim. They love Allah, they love Jesus. And, you know, they have to stay within the mainstream. And we know this because we just saw it again with Kyrie. We just saw it. And we saw it with the brother Muhammad, Rauf, back in the 90s. In basketball, again, we saw it when he was making a stand. We saw it with Kaepernick. We see these things happening, and now we're seeing it on a different stage to show that you do not have a voice. Matter of fact, we even saw it with Reggie White, the great Reggie White, the defensive end for the Green Bay Packers. We saw it with him. He retired. He went into ministry. And one of his last – now, this is a grown man, strong as an ox, been an athlete, didn't do drugs or drink. He started talking about in his ministry that the people are that the Negro are the Israelites, and all of a sudden he met his demise. Now, they say it's natural causes, but who knows? But the point is that they don't have as a so-called black person in this country, we do not have at that level freedom. We just don't. A lot of them. Go ahead.
You got a good point there, because the black seminaries have been shut down. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that, the college I went to that had a seminary, well, it's no longer belong to that denomination. It is now belong to the white denomination. So therefore, what are you going to get from that? It's more of the Western European theology.
That's
and
right.
When I was in seminary, one of the black seminary, I went to one where they had, well, I went to ITC, and where they had all but one of the black seminaries there. And that one that didn't go there, they now are part of the United Methodist Church. That's who influenced their thinking, and that's who there was a president that got money from them to do build what they have there at that college now. And it's mm-hmm. really divorced from that church itself. And mm-hmm. they have gutted ITC. ITC, when I was there, was the Afrocentric. And there was the problem was the predominantly denomination was one that was really bankrolling the place. And they started pulling that money out. And it went down. It's on its way out. And see, my whole problem with people of color is that they run around here waiting on a savior, waiting for somebody to come and save them, somebody to come mm-hmm. and do something for them, when they already have everything that they need. They need to quit talking about dying and going to heaven. Because if you look at the word says that everything in heaven has been put right here on earth. So why mm-hmm. aren't we teaching that to the people? And there's a few of us that are doing that.
Right. And the thing is, we have to understand. And I know a lot of people, they don't quite gather this piece of the puzzle. But what we have to understand is, during the 20th century, we were not yet free. We were not yet redeemed. We were still under the Deuteronomy 28 curses. Once 2019, and this is what people got to really pay attention to. Once 2019 came, that was a major shift in everything. We at that point grew, because based on Genesis 15:13, the 400-year prophecy was over. And I know a lot of people want to parlay that with Egypt, the Hebrews in Egypt, but that's not historically, numerically, mathematically accurate. So there's been no other people on this planet that has gone through a 400-year captivity per se. The first 200 was physical. The last 200 was a mix of physical and mental. So, you know, now that time is over, what you're seeing is a change of an exchange of situation. And that exchange of situation is happening in our sports. It's happening. So we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to say, okay, so why would the country, the nation, the government say no to teaching what happened over the last 200 years in America? Why would they say no to that? So from a Negro perspective, we're saying, well, that happened and you did it. And from a non-Negro perspective, they're saying, can't we just go from here? And when you look at that in the broad And if you look at that away from the Broadway, meaning if you look at that based on what biblically, and we'll use the Bible in this situation, so because that's what people gravitate to. But if you look at scriptures overall, you would see that it's all about fruits. All about fruits. So if someone says that they love Jesus, but they are wielding a sword and killing you, or someone says that they love Jesus and they're in church, but they're redlining you, but they're lynching you, but they're oppressing you, are they truly doing Christ's work? So these are things that we have to take into consideration as to the whys things didn't occur. Even this conversation right now, this conversation would never have happened, even though we're talking about the things that happened then. It would never have happened pre-2019.
Yeah, I'm going to sound like what you're basically saying is that history, biblical history, and needs to be rewritten. And I'm saying that, flick on rewriting it, I'm saying that we should focus on spirituality. And and that is what I saw that propelled people of color into their greatness. They understood who they were, and just like you were talking about your gift as playing sports, that was a gift. And that gift came from the Creator.
It did, that's what I'm saying. No, I agree with you. Now, we did not have the same spirit as we do today to be able to see these things. We have to understand that a veil has been lifted away from us to be able to speak freely, to think freely, to act freely. And my wife loves to talk about hindsight, and you always can learn from hindsight. But what we're doing is talking about hindsight as it relates to us today. But during the time, we couldn't see it. And that also is scriptural. The fact that we as a people overall were always a spiritual people is the reason why we should consider who we are today to be those people of the book. We could not have done anything, and we know this even today, but we knew this then. But we were chasing, like I say, we were chasing after the ball. So whether that ball represented a soccer ball, football, basketball, baseball, work, money, title, degree, that's what we were doing. So essentially the society at large took the people from the book and took them away from chasing after the prize, right, and had them chasing after other things. And again, that's biblical. That's biblical because they've never had not chased after it. There's no other people on the planet that has gone through that have been distracted, put under so many distractions as us. When now we're just saying, hey, I just want to. It's like, and I always reference this because this is very key and it's very interesting as it relates to us. It's just like Moses and Pharaoh. Moses said, and this is something that they don't give the full question or the full statement Moses said. Moses said to Pharaoh, let my people go so that they can go and worship their Elohim. That's what Moses was saying. That's what Moses said to Pharaoh. But when you hear that, you're saying, let my people go. But there's a bigger piece of that. Let them go so that they may worship their Elohim. Well, if you apply that to American society or European society over the last 2,500 years, they would not allow the people, the Israelites, the Hebrews, one, to exist, and two, to worship their own God. And it only makes sense because we were not, it was not time. Now it is time. And that's why I'm saying when we look at this sporting scenario, that the residual of the sporting scenarios here today, we have to look at this from a spiritual perspective of order, because so many things are out of order. When it comes to sports, it's still out of order. You got men trying to be women to be able to play their game, to be best at their game. That's out of order. There's a lot of dysfunction. So now when we are teaching or we're playing, what we're doing today is doing it in a way that is giving light to the Father, which is a beautiful thing to watch us now, to watch our minds work, to see who we are, to hear us. Over the last 200 years, we were never heard. We were never considered. Our opinions never mattered. And it's been that way for quite some time. So now, all of a sudden, since 2019, all that has changed, as well as the modes of study, the various modes of study that we are now able to undertake, where at one point it was, don't look at the zodiac, don't look at the stars or astrology, don't talk about divine power as it relates to magic, because that's of the devil. And now we start to realize that the devil is a, as I like to put it, the devil is a contracted employee. He is contracted. He is not a owner. He has no authority. But because the civilization, Western civilization, made the devil an owner, gave him ownership of their civilization, they allowed him to have rulership or gave him power. And that power was over them, but it was really over us. But now that systematically has been broken, and now you're starting to see, even in sports, you're starting to see brothers and sisters speak up. You're starting to see in education brothers and sisters speaking up. You're starting to see everywhere that we are speaking up, as opposed to being quiet now.
Well, the thing that I'm looking at is this. We don't need to keep running behind them, asking them to teach our children. We got all of these buildings. All of these buildings, all they do is jump up and down on Sunday morning and lots of place up. And in that congregation, you got teachers, you got psychologists, you got doctors, you got lawyers. Why aren't we doing for our own as opposed to sending ours over to somebody else and hopefully that they will teach them? And then all we have to do is look at the dropout rate. The dropout rate for African Americans is sky high, especially for African American males. And let's go back to sports. African American males will play a sport in school. They would not have to worry about their education. They would be passed along until they have reached the age out, and then they just go get them another one, and they just keep it moving. And then that person don't understand why they're sitting out there. why people don't love them anymore, why people ain't bowed down to them. Because those institutions made them their God.
That's right. I mean, and you know, you make a point about why we need to send them to them. We could do, my take on that is exactly like what you said, but I'm saying it from this perspective. I'm saying that, you know, parents need to teach their kids the truth. They need to teach the kids the full armor of the Most High. They need to be at home explaining history to them, telling them who they are, so that when they do go into, because you asked the question, why would we have to? Well, one, because if we don't, then they'll come to the house, break up the family, and say, you're not letting your kid go to our schools to learn in our system. And for a long time, that's been their system. It's been their rulership. That is, what is that, Romans 25, until the fullness, Israel was blind until the fullness of the Gentiles come in. So now the fullness, the cup of iniquity is running over. The Gentiles, Europeans, are feeling the pressure of a civilization lost, and we now get the opportunity to teach the truth. What this is all about, and people mix up a lot of this, and this is in sports and everything. This has nothing to do with race, absolutely nothing to do with race. This is a battle of truth. What has been hidden? The truth. Inadvertently, it hide the truth. Because they hid the truth, they hid the people. Because they hid the truth and the people, they hid the plain and simple things of God to the people. And that's all written as well. These things, the reasons why people are, you know, I won't even go there, but one of the things that I've noticed is, and maybe you can attest to this, one of the things that I've noticed is, especially in Scripture, it says that we fight against, not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, so in high places, okay? So that means they're not going to be at your Starbucks waiting on you. They're not going to be in a small place. They're going to be in high places that control, right? So that's going to be your government places, so that we got to realize that. That's not hard to recognize. But one of the things that I've noticed is that when it talks about this principality, this spiritual warfare, that is mental illness. So if you just take a look at the world that we live in and lived in over the last 220 years, let's say that means that's from 223 years, that means from 1800 to now. We don't have to go any further back, but we can. And it, rightfully so, we should, but we won't, just for sake of time. But if we look at that time period, what we can say about the Negro was they were in a state of mental illness. They were in a full-on spiritual warfare where they were losing, and that was by design because of the prophecies. But when you look at 2023, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my generation, we got duped out of spiritual understanding and we were introduced to the scientific method in
That's
terms
right.
of
and
education. And
That's
also
right. and
we were
because.
Out of the spiritual aspect of the word I need to go take a nap.
You're right. Are you okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
My point is that from that, all of that, what you're saying is true, but that was supposed to be true because it was not our time yet. So once the 400 years came or was up, I should say, now what you see is a lot of mental illness on the other side. And we see this through their actions. We can look at government. We can look at policy. We can look at education. We can even look at sports. And we can see a side of society at large. We can see a large cloud of dysfunction, stupor, or mental illness or madness that has come. Now, during the 90s, 80s and 90s, really the 70s, 80s and 90s, I'd say those 30 years, what was our people dealing with? We were dealing with addiction in a worse way. We were dealing with heroin and crack. And what did they do? They said, okay, well, what's going to happen is you guys are going to jail. We're about to create the industrial prison complex, and we're going to make money off of you all going to jail. But now, in the 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, that same addiction that was over us has now switched to over them. And that's not to say, yay, no, because I don't revel in anyone's demise, but we have to realize what is happening. And if we can consider, you know, a lot of people, they look at, they have their own understanding, right, of things. But there is one understanding of things. Yes, we have the free will to do right and wrong, but there is a set in motion script. And I won't say luckily, but I'll say thankfully enough, the Father had us write it down. And as we wrote these things down, we can, you know, they were never, all the things that have been written down before now was never for them. It was for us. It was for this time period. And we can see this and understand this because we're the time clock. That's what the 400 years represents, a time clock.
Okay.
For the beginning.
If that's the case, then why can't we form our own league? And we have the power and we have the authority to do it, the spiritual
mm-hmm.
power and authority to do it. Why don't
right.
we do it?
Well, I'm gonna answer it like this because that's a good question. I'll answer it like this because we have to ask ourselves the question. The question is, are we doing this within this society, for this society? Are we doing this for the society to come? So will the society to come look like this society? Will we be doing the same things? Would there be a need for that? Now, that would mean that people have to be responsible in their thinking enough to see that things have changed to the extent that some of this stuff might not be around here much longer. So would you go and I use this all the time, would you go and build your house on sand with a tsunami coming? Or would you go to the rocks and build them? And if you built it on the rocks, would it look the same as it would on the sand? So your question is, how come we just don't? Why don't we just get along now and just make this happen? Because now we're in our authority. Well, we're in the individual authority to come up out of situations that we were put in based on our Deuteronomy 28 curses. But that's not going to manifest until the collective consciousness, which is getting there, of the few. Begin to take hold. And again, I keep saying, and although that I definitely understand that I'm not waiting around and we do need to help now and there's ways of doing it now, we have to understand that are we going to be chasing after the real prize, or are we going to be chasing after a trophy or a medal?
Okay. Now, what you just said is what I've been trying to teach the people. We don't deal with the problem. We deal with the solution to the problem. And the solution is not what we see right now. The solution is to come. So we have been playing to what happened in the past. We have to forget what happened in the past and move out beyond that. And that's why my whole thing now is you start with the young people and prepare them. And in the end, we might not be around to see it, but in the end, it will come to pass.
Oh, yeah.
Because this whole thing is getting ready to collapse. In my lifetime, baseball almost went out of existence. So does football. Now is going through a crisis.
Why didn't it go out of business then?
Why didn't it go out of business?
Mm-hmm. There is a reason as to why it did not.
Well, tell me. Tell us.
They integrated us into it.
Oh, yeah.
They integrated
us
into
it. Just like everything else.
Just like everything else. So, that's right. So you asked the question of, or rather you made a statement of saying, we can't live in the past. It's not living, and this is what people have to realize with people who are in the know today in terms of who are studying to show themselves approved. It's not living in the past. It's living in the present with the cloud of the past still lingering. So, you know, those days that they go, oh, it's going to be cloudy, a little sun, a little cloud. But then it starts raining, and you're like, well, where'd it rain? I thought it was, well, they said it was going to be cloudy. Well, the past, and this is all scriptural as well, the past has to be atoned for in order for a person to be okay with the present so that they can then find success or find endurance and perseverance for the future. So what has happened is, for a long time, our past has been pushed aside. And it's not that we're saying, we need you, we want people to know what happened, because everyone knows what happened. It's the fact that they don't want to acknowledge what's happened. And just like we had to repent. Christ tells us, all the prophets, repent. So what has happened is, for our people, we've sat back and we've just dealt with the past, meaning we've looked at it from a slave perspective. But what is changing today is now, because this is knowledge, we've been destroyed for lack of knowledge, so therefore we had to gain our knowledge back. So when we gain our knowledge back of who we were, like what we did, how great we were, and that's not African I'm talking about. I'm talking about in terms of Israelites, how great we were in terms of overall knowledge. Then we can look at it from the perspective of, hey, I'm seeking after the knowledge, our heritage, the greatness of us, and not dealing with our nadir or our slavery. But they go hand in hand because you've got to be able to deal with both.
Yeah, we've run out of time, and we do have another listener. But I mean, a listener, but 90 seconds. But it's not the knowledge. That's what Satan, how he tricked Adam and Eve. He gave them the knowledge of good and evil. It is under, understanding, if our people understand what the game is that's being played, then they can play the game or they can walk away.
Let me interject that word. Let me interject that word. You said understand. No, that's also part of the dilemma that we're under. We are understanding things. What we have to do is overstand them. And right now, your point is valid. At the same time, we have to understand that words matter and words mean things. And as we overstand things, then we gain the wisdom of that. With the knowledge,
okay.
we were destroyed for lack of knowledge because we allowed our knowledge to we dismissed wisdom, just like Solomon. And now we're gaining our knowledge back, which then allows us to have wisdom. Because when we were losing our knowledge, wisdom was not around anymore. Just like Solomon. So,
all right. Well, on that point, we're going to have to end because we got 10 seconds. Now it's less than 10 seconds. And the person who called in, I'm sorry, our time ran out. If you call back next week and you got a question or comment, bring it, or you can email me talkingdrums12@gmail.com. And we either will take time to discuss it at the beginning of the program next week, or we will send you a written response. The email address is talkingdrums12@gmail.com. I want to thank you for your time. And we got off a little slow, but we end up on time. And words that work have meaning and feeling, and it generates feeling within people. So until next Sunday, we say shalom, and we'll be back 6 o'clock, 6 p.m.
All praises. Shalom.
All righty.